year and a huge year for women's rugby as the PWR sees a new team at the top of the table. It is a great start for Harlequins fans.
We'll be reminding you of all that happened in round 11 as the defending champs Gloucester Hartbury stormed Fortress Sandy Park to deliver the Chiefs their first loss of the season.
We'll look forward to the first round of Premiership Women's Rugby of the new year, which will include a chat with Bristol's boss, Dave Ward, as he awaits the arrival of You Know Who, plus Lightning Lock, Lily Ives Campion.
Yes, we've heard from plenty of you as well, so we'll dive into what you're looking forward to in 2025, and we'll answer your questions as we have a special guest in referee Sarah Cox joining us to talk all things advantage. Our advantage is, that's Philippa Tassiot. I'm Nick Heath, and this is the Power Pod. Happy New Year, Philippa Tassiot. How are you?
Happy New Year. Well, as you and I know, but the listeners won't know, the fact that I just took six times to say my intro script, because I am a little bit off the ball, as I've got the lurgy.
Yes, you're a little... You're a little,
what a way to start the new year.
A little lower on the octave than we used to. and yes, but we're delighted that you're joining us, and hopefully we can't catch the germs down the airwaves. But thank you for joining. Are you feeling all right?
Yeah, no, I'm feeling okay. It wouldn't be a holiday, would it, without a lurgy? Oh, it's like that whole PE teacher thing, you know, as soon as they finish day one of the holidays, you just get that lurgy. And I very much switched off this year, which was the wrong thing to do. Just keep going, just keep working, keep your mental.
Yeah.
It got me. Yeah. Got me when I was down. But no, all good. How was your skiing trip?
Ski trip was amazing. Thank you. Very, very lucky. Big dump of snow just as we arrived. Then some blue sky days over Christmas. It was absolutely stunning. So I felt very, very, very lucky indeed. And did Santa bring everything that the family wanted?
He certainly did. He visited Cardiff and left everyone what they needed. The reindeer came down. We even had a little video actually of the reindeer eating the carrots in front of our fireplace. Yeah, we had a sneaky little video set up, which was amazing. Yeah, no, it was brilliant actually. Just all apart from the lurgy, but you know, there's worse things that can happen. So everything else was still fantastic.
Super. Well, it seems a little while ago that we had round 11, but there were some amazing results, some amazing performances. So we're going to look back at those in a moment. We will look ahead to round 12. And we've got a few guests to squeeze in as well. This is a bumper-packed New Year's Day edition of the Power Pod. So let's get into it, Phil. Take us to that first game from round 11 when we were just before Christmas.
Yeah, and what a game. Wasn't it? Saturday the 21st of December saw Saracens beating Bristol Bears 33-27. So Saracens came back from being 14 points down to win this one at home, outscoring the Bears 5-4. Kelsey Clifford eventually put the Londoners in front after half an hour of the barnstorming run from the 22, basically being Sarah Byrne in front of Sarah Byrne.
Yeah.
Not an easy thing to do. Bristol stole the lead once more before Sarries took charge to see the result home. Now, Sarries somehow won the match with 32% possession and 29% territory, and to top it off, conceded 21 penalties. What?
How do you do that? That's what I can't understand. It's less than a third of the possession and territory.
Yeah.
21 penalties. You're not coming out on the right side of that result. Extraordinary that they did. Frustrated for Bristol, who played very well. The Saracens performance. There was an early yellow card for Zoe Harrison. I thought that was crazy harsh. Sympathies to Zoe there. I thought there was a clear release. She went in for a turnover and she got pinged for not releasing. But anyway, then pretty big moment, certainly a big moment that I know Dave Ward has sort of focused on in chatting to him this week. 57th minute penalty. It was a Bristol Bears scrum 5 metres out or a bit further out, and they were in the ascendancy. They'd won a few scrum penalties in a row. Hannah Botterman absolutely drove through the heart of Kelsey Clifford, actually ended up lifting her completely off her feet. But the referee said that was dangerous scrummaging and said that's not safe. It was 21-19 to Saris at that point. Bristol looked in charge. They did go on to score via Jazz Joyce, but credit to Saris for bringing the results home in the face of those stats. And the whole post-match stat table, we get given these stats, and on the left side it's blue and the right side it's orange, and it was all orange. It was all Bristol, but there was one that stood out that was bluer than orange, and that was Saracens winning the turnovers 12-3, which just kind of tells to me a story that actually at a few of those key moments, Saracens were able to wrestle control back and stop that Bears momentum.
Yeah, it was a really impressive performance by Saris. And this game was super tight. Like, it must be a really difficult one to review for Dave Ward, because he'd be like, I asked you to do this, 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 and this. You did all of that and you did it well. And we still lost. Like, it's a difficult one to review. But like I say, you've got to give credit to Saris, because we always say, don't we, if you're playing against Saris, you've got to match/beat them up front with your carries. Bristol Bears did that. You've got to target the set piece. Bristol Bears did that. But I think one of the key moments for me where I was really like, oh, Saris, like, this is their game. I think it was around the 70th minute. It was when actually Zoe Harrison scores her try for her 100th appearance for Saris, which is class. So awesome to her. Saris had a scrum about 5 or 6 meters out, and Bristol Bears just pushed them back, pushed them back, pushed them back. Somehow, I don't know how, but Gabrielle Senneth got that ball out as the ball was marching back. They did a strong carry, ball to the edge. And I was like, wow. Like, Bristol have done everything that you should need to do to defend that situation, and you still scored. Like, good on you, Saris. Because they've, you know, season hasn't gone exactly to plan. They're certainly not where they want to be on the table. But a performance like that against Bristol Bears, that's got to be a confidence booster.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, well done, Saris, for managing to bring that one home. Next game that we're looking at, Sale Sharks 7, Loughborough Lightning 50 from round 11. Chrissy Scurfield scoring half of Lightning's 8 tries. 2 in each half as the visitors took a 19-7 lead into halftime. A brace of tries for Catherine Treader as well, with Nathan Smith's side adding 31 unanswered second half points to their tally. And I thought the back line carries told a bit of a story. So through the kind of Sale Sharks 11, 12, 13, 14, they each made 11, 7, 5, and 6 carries, compared to similar positions for Lightning, 14, 13, 12, and 5. So that was Scurfield, Kelter, Scarrett, and Mataitonga. Lizzie Duffy did make 18 carries at the back for Sale. So that was a better number, but kick receipts probably a large part of that.
Yeah, certainly. Look, it was great to see that Loughborough Lightning have built on that previous game against Harlequins, where we said that's probably one of the best games that they'd had the round before. So it's good to see them continuing with that momentum. Chrissy Scurfield, man. Wow. She is standout, isn't she? You know, she carried for 244 metres on her own. 244 metres. Now, in any other round, we would be saying that's an individual record, except the fact that Ellie Kildem was also playing in that round. And she actually beat her. She had about 260 metres. But still, those stats are amazing.
Yes. Chrissy Scurfield picking up the player of the round nod as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and rightfully so, because yes, okay, sometimes when you look at back three players and they've got that large amount of meters, you think, okay, maybe they've received the ball off a kick, you know, deep in their 22. And as they're running back up the field, really no one in front of them, they're clocking up meters. So sometimes the stats can be skewed. But watch the game, watch Chrissy Scurfield, because the amount of second and third touches she goes for, she does her business, carries the ball, gets ground, and instead of sort of just backtracking as a winger would rightfully so do, pull that width, get on the edge, she's looking again, she's off shoulders, she's just everywhere. So brilliant work rate.
What about then this game at Sandy Park?
Wow. Okay, so Exeter Chiefs 12, Gloucester Hartbury 41. I literally spent the first half in shock. Like, it was like a completely different team on both sides. Gloucester Hartbury were amazing, and Exeter just went into their shells. Yeah. So look, it was an astonishing performance from the champions, and it truly gave the unbeaten Chiefs a bloody nose. Gloucester scoring 7 tries to just 2 from the home side at Sandy Park. At Sandy Park. It's just mad. Exeter reduced to just 2 line breaks compared to 16 line breaks from Gloucester Hartbury. Chiefs missed 43 tackles as the Cherry and Whites made 17 offloads to keep shifting that point of attack. It was a brace of tries from Pip Hendy and Mia Venner.
Yeah, it was extraordinary, and I enjoyed watching this live. Thanks to Exeter for putting on the stream on this one. And look, Gloucester, they were playing phases, as you said. You actually said in our last pod, you know, they're going to have to play the phases. They're going to have to be patient. And they were. Pretty much the opening 4 minutes was just Gloucester Hartbury playing phases. Then they spent a 10-minute period defending their line. They held up Hope Rogers. They held up Dorothy Wall. Not many teams have been doing that this season. And then I was messaging Caleb. I was like, what about Emma Singh's Fend? Is it possibly the best Fend in the world game right now? Has she taken on that mantle from the retired Portia Woodman? And then Caleb said, I think Abby Dow might be having a word with you, which I thought was a fair enough, but it was just so strong. And then, you know, 2 tries from Mia Venner. She was put into space by Emma Singh. She fended Katie Buchanan twice, then Nancy McGillivray, and scored effectively from 55 metres out. That was very special. And then after the second try, Gloucester's third was scored. They basically, Chiefs restarted. Gloucester caught it. They went through 5 phases. The ball went through. I replayed this. I had to note this now. Went through 12 different pairs of hands. So 12 out of the 15 players on the field touched the ball for Gloucester, and then they got the score through Bethan Lewis. I messaged Sean Lynn, and I don't think I'm breaking any confidences to share that he replied to my message, just saying, "We are clicking. We found our identity here." and boy, didn't they!
Oh gosh, didn't they? They've added another layer to their attack. You know, the amount of times you'd see the ball come out from the ruck area and there'd be movement, like a first phase of movement. You're like, wow, that was good. They've created space. But then rather than just hands, there'd be another phase of movement. There were just players running from every direction. It was absolutely fantastic to see. I did think Jade Shackles in at 13 added a bit of spice. I like her in that position. I thought she did really well.
The presence of Flaky George is also really proving to be a difference in how that back line trusts what's coming next. I think her relationship with Mo Hunt is really important as well. It just seems to be that since she's stepped back in, it's all where it needs to be. And I know when we get to some of the listener messages a bit later that there's a bit of support of that particular shot. But a stunning performance from Gloucester Hartbury, and a really chastening one if you're a part of the Exeter Chiefs, because I guess that's just one of those days where you've been blown away, right? How much do you go through that, or how much do you just go, all right, that wasn't our day. We're just going to move on. Honourable mention as well for Claudia McDonald, who made her return as well, which we will probably touch on again a bit later. Right, then we had Christmas. Everyone enjoyed a bit of turkey or whatever you had. Roast beef in my case, up the slopes. Thanks very much. then it was the 28th of December, the big game at Allianz Stadium as the women ran out ahead of the men. Harlequins 42, Leicester Tigers 17, it finished. What a great start it was for Tigers. Who else? Meg Jones getting on the score sheet, crashing over. She even gave the full yeehaw celebration in front of fellow Cowboy Club member Ellie Kildun, which we enjoyed, as I'm sure Ellie did. But Quins didn't take long to hit back, did they? 5 tries thwarting the Tigers in that first half before a brace from Kildun in the second half. Tigers got 3 on the board, not quite the 4th for the 4-try bonus. Thought they might. And look, Quins going top of the table. Yes, Chiefs are in second with a game in hand, 2 points down. But it was a record-breaking crowd of over 18,000. How do you feel about that record-breaking number, Phil? Because they take it at, I think they take it about 4 o'clock, which is just as the second half's getting underway. But obviously there are players coming in ahead of the men's game, which is taking place, you know, an hour and a half later. I don't know how easily it sits with me that this is called a club record for a women's game when is it really?
Yeah, I think that's where you just need to have that little caveat of standalone or doubleheader. And yeah. I think let's embrace that the doubleheader got 18,000. Brilliant. That's yeah. class. They still didn't have to come in. People wanted yeah. to come in. And they were treated to a good game of rugby. And we sort of had our, you know, could there be a bit more of a competitive game they could have put on, rah, rah, rah. But actually, I really enjoyed that game. Mm. I thought Leicester Tigers put in a fantastic show and Harlequins just, oh, superstar standing up, brilliant rugby being played. So look, I think let's celebrate it. It's the record that was broken and set by Harlequins last year in the big game 13, where they got 16,000. So they've added that. That is a sign of growth. Let's celebrate yeah. that. But definitely let's also make sure we very much celebrate the standalone club record because that is also, you know, it won't probably be near those numbers in the UK, but let's still celebrate it and acknowledge it as a marker. And like I say, it shows growth, which is the most important thing.
Yeah, it does. And it is getting bigger each year. So yeah, fair point. Very good. So that was how round 11 turned out. So let's look ahead then to round 12, our first matches in the PWR for 2025. Round 12, where another new record is actually set to be broken. We've two games on Saturday, two on Sunday, the 5th Jan, as two venues host double headers again. So on Saturday, London Derby as Ealing Trailfinders host their neighbours from just 9 kilometres away in Harlequins. In the East Midlands, Tigers women play against Sale Sharks in a bottom of the table clash. That's straight after the men's game at Mattioli Woods, Welford Road, a 5:50 kickoff. Sunday lunchtime sees the repeat of last year's final as Bristol Bears host Gloucester Hartbury in front of the cameras at Ashton Gate. That's a 12:45 lunchtime kickoff. And the weekend concludes in Northampton when Loughborough Lightning play Saracens at 5:30. That's right after the Saints men face Bath. So, four games to look forward to. Worth saying as well, Exeter Chiefs are the team with the bye week.
Yeah. Okay, so on Saturday, 3 p.m, we've got Trailfinders, who are currently sitting in sixth, against Harlequins, who are top of the table. Mm. So Trailfinders have won 2 and lost 2 at home so far this season. Harlequins are on their 8-match winning streak. It's just insane. They haven't lost since the 12th of October in round 2. That's incredible.
That's a while away, isn't it?
Yeah. That's a while away. Ealing had the bye week before Christmas, so they've actually had 3 weeks off. So let's just hope that they've shown a little restraint when it comes to the pigs in blankets, or indeed the Prosecco.
Yes, either of those. Yeah, I mean, Trailfinders mark the first team in the table as you look down that are conceding more than they're scoring. So them in sixth and those below them are in that realm. Also, we touched on Emma Taylor in our last episode before Christmas, having got injured. We weren't sure, you know, how it was looking. Didn't look great. And unfortunately, she has shared on her socials, "I wasn't expecting my season to end this early." So our commiserations to Emma Taylor. She's been a brilliant player in the loose, in the set piece, and also goal kicking for Ealing Trailfinders. So I think she is a big loss for them. And Quinn's turning up, looking to continue where they've left off, that 8-match winning streak. Haven't lost for blimmin' ages. And they're just having fun. Like that. If for anybody who didn't see the post-match interview that was done on TNT, where Sarah Elgin was alongside Emily Scarrett-Mohunt, but Alex Callender, and they were just two Welsh girls having a natter, really, weren't they? But it was lovely to see Al Cal clearly having such a brilliant time, having a lot of fun at the club. You know, there were questions being asked of why is it clicking this season compared to last, even though we know you weren't there. And she just seemed to be saying, we've got belief, but we're just having a lot of fun. And it really comes across, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. You know, there were so many times, right, when I was watching the Harlequins Tigers game and it looked like Harlequins were playing with 20 players and Tigers were playing with 10. Yeah. Like, it was just Harlequins players everywhere. Like, we talk about that almost double layer of attack that Gloucester Hartbury have got. Harlequins are developing that now as well. There just seems to be players running everywhere, but it seems like they've almost been given that free rein to, if you see a line, if you see a gap, just go for it. Like, the trust is there in the individuals that they'll pick and make the right decision. And Al Cal, by the way, 19 carries, 21 tackles, top of any forward on there. Yet she actually wasn't one of the ones that almost stood out, because that's just what we expect from Al Cal now. That's just her work rate. That's what she's bringing. But also, I thought Kaylee Powell and Lagi Tuima, the connection that they've got, you know, between them, literally just two passes, they're covering the width of the field. Like, they're spreading the attack with just two passes like that. And it's just, they're going to become such a difficult team to defend. And this is going to be where it's going to be really hard for Trailfinders, because they've been fantastic in attack, but it's that transition into defense that they haven't got quite right, which is where they're conceding lots of points. With Harlequins, they'll get you short round the ruck with their big, strong carriers, Jade Conkle, picking and going. Or maybe they'll get you through the centers where all of a sudden Al Cal will pop up on a shoulder. Or just maybe they can put two huge passes and then you've got Ellie Kildun to deal with on the wing. Like, yeah. Defensively, that's a really hard team to play against. So kind of feel for Trailfinders a little bit. I think especially with missing Emma Taylor, this could be a 50-pointer if they're not careful.
Yeah, and it's also the Trailfinders' fast track, you know, 4G surface at Vallis Way, which Quinns may be licking their lips about. So yes, we wish Trailfinders the best of luck in welcoming the 8 winning streak Harlequins to West London. All right, the next game then on Saturday, that's the 5:51 Leicester Tigers in 8th against Sale Sharks in 9th. That one, Matty Early Woods, Welford Road after the men, that doubleheader, they are playing Exeter, the men. Tigers, as we mentioned, they showed some good flashes against Quinns. It did feel like for periods they might get that fourth try bonus. They definitely missed Julia Immaculée when she got the yellow. I thought she was in good form, as she has been over the course of the season. Tiger scrum, interestingly, 100% against Quinns. Sale scrum was 100% against Lightning. So there's an interesting focus of competition, I think. Two teams that have focused on their scrum and set piece and actually has proved to be working for them. So that'll be interesting. Of course, I was up doing commentary on the first fixture between these two this season up in Salford, that return match that Sale Sharks targeted, and was a complete damp squib of a disaster for them. Tigers just turned up and absolutely ran riot. So it'll be interesting to see how Tigers cope with the pressure being at home after the men, and whether Sale Sharks can go, right, it's time for us to turn up and spoil the party.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look at, based on the pressure that would have been on Tigers last week against Harlequins, and I thought they turned up, they massively turned up. You know, they did not go into their shell, which with that crowd, with the fact you're playing against a team that are so in form in Harlequins, you could have easily done. We talked to me, Meg Jones, who's going to respond better to all the cameras being on her? Meg Jones, like, mm-hmm. Brilliant. And the team fed off that. But I did feel for Tigers, and this isn't a quick fix. This is a, you know, part of a longer term part of their journey is the fitness levels between players. There was a period of around about, I'd say probably about 60 minutes, last 20 minutes of the game, which is where you really have to start digging in. And there was a period where it was like a fantastic carry from Amy Cocaine. I think Julia Makwela carried really hard. There were a couple, and then they just ran out of players. Like, there was literally no one there and they got turned over. And as the camera panned out, you could see there were lots of Tiger players in the backfield that just couldn't quite get there. So you can see the ambition, you can see the individuals, but they've all got to be up there in regards to their levels of fitness so they can all keep playing to that standard for the game. Because there are good bits there. It's just still molding, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you think in terms of relative fitness, that's where Tigers, you know, they might not have been quite up there compared to Quinns, but compared to Sale Sharks, they're going to be in a much better position?
Yes, I do, definitely. And I think it's the fact that they can control their tempo a little bit more, where Harlequins completely controlled the tempo of the game against Tigers.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Meg Jones will be, you know, in more of the dominating position there to speed things up, slow things down, put those kicks in, you know, and have a bit more control.
And we saw a decent amount of Charlotte Frey, I think, carrying well as well at Allianz Stadium. But I think she's really important in these particular games where actually she's got more of an opportunity to stand up where perhaps there are less Jade Conkles taking the eye, you know, as we saw at Quinns. So I saw that in the sort of season total, Sale Sharks are third for the most kicks, which sort of inevitably feels like it leaves them a long way down the list in other areas. So things like meters, defenders beaten, visits to the 22, because arguably they haven't got the ball. I wonder what that means in terms of their confidence to play, and whether that's just a tactical thing that's coming from the coaches. You know, we want to try and pin teams back, we'll put pressure on them when we're there, fine. But I wonder whether actually where the modern game is really about teams trying to play, whether there might be a consideration for Sale Sharks to actually try and hold on to the ball a bit more and trust their phases. But again, whether that comes down to a fitness thing, I don't know.
Yeah, good point. Okay, next game we'll be going into will be Sunday on the 5th, 12:45 p.m. Bristol Bears taking on Gloucester Hartbury. And this, as we know now, is at Ashton Gate. So this is going to be your live game on TNT. We heard that they're tracking the tickets at around about 7,000, which will be a new record attendance in the Bears, for the Bears, sorry. Bears have a game in hand, but there is still a 6-point gap between them in fifth and Sarries in fourth. So they really need a win on Sunday. Gloucester Hartbury, as we saw against Exeter Chiefs, have really found their groove. So the question is, can they keep that up? And will we be seeing the first minutes of Premiership Women's Rugby played by the most followed rugby star on the planet, Ilona Marr? Well, one man who should know is the Bristol Bears head coach, Dave Ward. Nick caught up with him ahead of Sunday's repeat of last year's final. And it's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, when you have a player joining your team who brings so much value off field as well as they do on field.
Yeah, Ilona has landed today, New Year's Day, as we publish this pod. Not a whole lot of time to get up to speed. So how do you balance your decision making on selection when you know that all eyes are on your biggest asset? You've got the rugby side. You've probably got your marketing team in your ear on the other side. Let's hear from Dave Ward.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I suppose the easiest thing for me is the rugby side of it. I mean, I can purely say it from a performance perspective. If Ilona's fit and she's ready to go, is she going to help out the team this weekend? We're going to have to assess that Thursday and Friday and then make a rugby decision. You know, the one thing I can guarantee is she will be there on Sunday. In what guise? As I said, I'm not too sure at the moment. But like for me, that's easy. For the commercial and the other marketing teams, it's a bit more stressful, probably. But that's why I'm a rugby coach and not sitting, in the high seats at Ashton Gate.
It's probably not the ideal time to then be playing the defending champions, isn't it? Who seem to have sort of settled into their groove a little bit now after a bit of a slow start.
Yeah, it's one of those. You watch our game and you feel sorry for ourselves a little bit and then get over it pretty quickly. And then you go and watch Exeter versus Gloucester and you're like, okay, this is going to be interesting. So I think, like I said, is it the perfect time though, Nick? Is it the actual perfect time to play them? They've now lost that little bit of momentum they might have got in the Exeter game. We beat them 4 weeks ago. So it wasn't that long ago. We went up to King's Home and actually beat Gloucester. So I think they're a team that know a lot about us. We know a lot about them. But it's going to be, as always, a battle up front. And then, like I said, depending on which back line and which combinations they pick, the same as us, who holds onto the ball. And I'm sure Sean Lynn will be having exactly the same conversations with his Gloucester team, that the team that holds onto the ball the best, and Gloucester certainly did that against Exeter, will probably come out on top.
Well, it's very simple when you put it like that. It is going to be the big one this Sunday. I'm looking forward to being there with Katie Daly-McLean and Jenny Drummond's presenting, Claire Thomas reporting. Despite the loss last week, Bristol did have four players in the PWR Team of the Week. Hannah Bottoman, Sarah Byrne, Abby Ward, Roe Marston, Mulhern. So they were doing very well there. Look, chatting to Dave. There is, by the way, if you want to listen to the full chat with Dave, we are going to put that out as well as a little bonus listen. He was really honest, I think, with Ilona Marr coming in. They've got to put her through her training on Thursday and Friday and really see if she's got a shot. He goes on to say that it's not a case of ticking a box marketing wise and just getting her out there for 5 minutes. She's got to be on there to be able to contribute for 20 or 30 minutes. And he said to me, if she's got to go on after 20 because someone goes down, she needs to be ready to be able to do that. So it's going to be touch and go as to whether she makes it at the time of recording. We don't know. And keep your eyes on selection when it's published on Friday, because it's certainly going to be a big headline if Ilona Marr is wearing what I suspect will probably be that number 23 jersey.
Oh, and can you imagine the noise if she does run on the field? Like, it's gonna be insane. I am so excited for this game for so many reasons now. There's almost like the Ilona Marr is just like the absolute cherry on the cake.
And she'll be there regardless. You know, she's gonna be there, and I'm sure TV will be doing their best to get her on as well. It's gonna be a big occasion. As we said, nearly 7,000 already sold. It's tracking up towards that. Over 5,000 was already a record. So it's gonna be nice, and it feels like it's a nice time of year, straight out of you know, the new year, maybe the kids going back a couple of days at school, but then let's all pile down to Ashton Gate on Sunday and enjoy a game which is a repeat of last year's final. What do you think of the contest itself, Phil?
Well, you did mention about selection, and one thing that is going to be very difficult for Dave Ward to have to navigate is the amount of injuries they've got. I couldn't believe this until I saw them all down. So I'm just going to read them all out. Okay, all of these players, I'm not going to go into their specific injuries, but all of them will not be ready for this weekend. Okay, so Meryl Smith, Emma Orr, Kira Bevan, Lucy Burgess, Amber Reed, Jenna Devere, Izzy Jakes, Elaine Clark, Lana Skeldon, Jenny Hesketh. All unavailable. That's a long, and some of those injuries are serious. They'll be out for a while.
He rather needs Ilona Maher to be available.
Yeah. And the fact that Ilona Maher can play pretty much anywhere, you'd say. You could put her anywhere in the backs because of her sevens, but equally, she's got the size and the power to play in the forwards. She is perfect timing, really, to have a play like that coming in, you know?
Yeah, I love the idea that she comes on for half an hour. She's like, right, we need you to do 10 minutes at 7, then if you could do 10 minutes at 13, and then we'll pop you out on the wing, because we know you'd be tired by then, but we're still going to need you on the field. Swiss Army knife, Ilona Maher. Yeah, it's going to be a big one. Gloucester Hartbury in that really rich vein of form, having gone down to Fortress Sandy Park and smashed the Chiefs. I guess it's how much this Ilona Maher effect will lift the Bears, regardless of, you know, that she's there. They certainly will not want to repeat of what happened at the Stonex, which is being on the right side of all of the stats and not bringing the result home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly right. And actually, I just wanted to give a little nod to Sarah Byrne. Did you see that follow-up play on Holly Aitchison? Holly Aitchison broke from her 22, and all of a sudden, there was just like someone overtaking her. I was like, who is Sarah Byrne? My God, these props are just killing it. Like, they are putting the wingers to shame. Like, unbelievable gas. Unbelievable. Yeah.
Just sort of shove them some more food at lunchtime. Go, come on, you like this. Just slow them down a little bit. I don't need you overtaking me, Sarah Byrne. Thank you very much. Oh, another sausage. Yes, help yourself. Yes. If you can get yourself down to Ashton Gate, it would be great to see a bumper crowd there, continuing to allow PWR to make waves, and no doubt we might have a few transatlantic friends who follow Ilona Maher paying this game a bit of attention. What's your prediction for this one, Phil? I know we don't often do them, but I'm going to put you right on the spot.
God. I mean, honestly, if Gloucester Hartbury can play even at 90% of what they did last round, you have to say Gloucester Hartbury. Mm-hmm. But if Bristol Bears can, they've just got to stop that phase play, the amount of time and ball that Gloucester Hartbury have. They've got to do something, whether it's that, just give like two or three players the free rein to shoot up at any point, break the defensive structure and just shoot up and nail someone, get them back. Easier said than done, but they've got to do something to change the picture. Then maybe Bristol Bears will have a chance. But this is going to be a brilliant game.
Excellent. All right, let's move on then to the final game of the weekend, which will be Sunday the 5th, 5:30. Loughborough Lightning in 7th against Saracens in 4th. That one is at the St Stadium at Franklin's Gardens. The doubleheader after the Saints men play Bath. Player with the best ratings from round 11, Chrissy Schofield, making the team of the week alongside teammates Sadia Kabea and Alev Kelter. Against Bristol, Marley Packer for Saris made a round high of 27 tackles with a success rate of over 93%. You do not want Marley Packer coming at you. Alex Osterbury, he said after that one that despite the stats being against them, it was the fight and heart that won them the match, which I thought was really telling from Alex Osterbury. So Lightning at home. And this week I had the chance to catch up with their second row with that singular cap so far for the Red Roses, Lily Ives Campion. Lily, talk to me about how the season in her eyes has been fun and that there's a real belief in the game plan that saw them grab those 8 tries against Sale. And I also wanted to get Lily's take on which of her teammates are on fire at the moment.
Well, without a doubt, Chrissy, I think she is unbelievably quick. I'm very jealous. she honestly, when she gets hands on ball, like she could be going for miles. And I think that she's a really important asset to our team, especially to obviously inject that bit of pace into the team, especially as we've had a bit of an injury with Bo. I think she's been a really important player. I think Alev, again, major ball carrier, major distributor, been on fire. She's a great player for bringing momentum to a team. She, her knowledge as well, and just her skill set is just world class. So she brings a lot to the team. I think also like within the forwards, Hallie's been doing a really great job, being really consistent. She's been an absolute great player for us. And Daisy as well. Two really consistent players every week. And I think that they're like players like that are really what create a team and really drive momentum within the team. It's just been good.
The momentum givers helping Lightning go forward. I'd actually just like to play this second clip from our chat, because Loughborough, like many clubs, they're building strength and power within their team. The S&C and Nathan Smith, we talked about it early season as to what they're doing to try and get their players, I guess, bigger and stronger, ready for the season, perhaps a bit quicker than they might. And look, strength and power is an aspect that we hope female athletes can embrace. But we know that in some areas, it can feel challenging for women and girls to be strong, or more importantly, they can be worried about looking muscular or big. So this was Lily's response when I asked if she thinks things are changing for the better in this area.
When you see posts and you see people talking about things like this, there's so much positivity. And I think that it's really good to see that. And I think that people feeling that way is kind of like, for me anyway, I don't see it as that much, because in order to perform, you need to be strong. And to also, in order to perform in rugby, you've got to have some level of baseline of being strong and things like this. And I think that that's really normal, and that's really been normalized. And I think that that's really important as well. So then people have to look up to these women. And instead of potentially like, even me at one point, I was like, no, I don't want to look like that. Like, it's kind of scared me. But actually, I fell in love with gymming, that feeling of like growing, that feeling of like the kind of the accomplishment of, say, getting a new PB, things like this, to the point where like I actually just love being in the gym. And I think that that's what's really important, is that people recognize that. And you can, and it's, like some people I know are unbelievably strong, but you just wouldn't tell. You just wouldn't be able to tell. I think that's what's so important. That's what's so unique about like the women's stature and the women's like body, is that you can be whatever, you can look like whatever, but as long as you're comfortable and happy within yourself, you can perform. And I think that's really important.
I think it's so brilliant that she has brought awareness to this, and we're seeing it more and more. And I hate to arc back to Ilona Marr, but she certainly does talk about her body shape and how she absolutely embraces it. She's got the beautiful beast, isn't it, that she sort of refers to, which is absolutely amazing, because we are all different shapes and sizes, and that should be absolutely embraced. And I just love the way now that we're seeing women treating their bodies with so much respect. They're embracing how amazingly powerful and strong they can be, and train them. Make yourself powerful, make yourself bigger. That's fantastic. And you know what? Then on the weekend, you want to go out and rock that dress, rock that dress.
Yeah.
You know, for me, Michaela Blythe at the World Rugby Awards, and if anyone hasn't seen this, please go back and have a look, because she looks like someone off a Marvel magazine. She looked amazing. She had all her muscles, all her strength, all her power on full display with the most beautiful dress. And she just looked stunning. And I was like, that is just spot on. Embrace our female athletes. We embrace the male athletes. We put them on a pedestal when they've got their muscles. Oh, look, you know, Roman god or whatnot. That's what our females are as well. They're the goddesses. And I just love the fact that now girls are excited to go to the gym to see how amazing their bodies can be, because they are adaptable. They will learn, they will grow, and they will allow you to play this sport that we love to the best of your ability.
Love it. Absolutely. And look, I'm the boy in the room. It's ridiculous. But the reason that probably women haven't felt confident in this area is because men haven't given them permission to in the past. Mm. It's been men who have judged them. And as a champion of equality, that's horrific. And I think it's great to be living in an era where these attitudes are changing. Women are taking control and saying, I will look how I want to look. Thank you. I will be powerful and strong if I want to. And this is all that matters. It's about the individual wanting to be whoever they want to be. So yeah, I'm in full support of it. It's great to hear it from Lily Ives Campion, and yeah, any youngsters out there, be strong, be beautiful, be bold, be a beast, and all the rest. So
be whatever you want to be.
Exactly. All right, let's take that positivity then and just refresh you with the table after round 11. Harlequins top, as we've mentioned a couple of times, 40 points. 2 points below them with a game in hand, Exeter Chiefs on 38. Same amount of points, but having played one more, Gloucester Hartbury. Saracens in fourth on 37. Then that six-point gap to Bristol, who have a game in hand on 31. Then it's Trailfinders played 9 on 18. Loughborough Lightning played 10 on 18. Leicester Tigers played 9 on 6. And Sale Sharks yet to get a point on the board. Okay, power line time, and it's a bit of a whopper this time.
It's been great to hear from plenty of you over the Christmas break, so let's get into some of your messages.
Yes, and let's start with one from Ali, who's a Chiefs fan and regularly listens to us when she's walking the dogs. Love that. And Ali was very happy to see Claudia McDonald on the bench before Christmas and no doubt on the field, as were we all. We also had a message from Rob, who got in touch, and he said it was very emotional seeing Claudia McDonald on the sidelines and is hoping for great things for Claudia McDonald in the Red Roses shirt once again in 2025. So thank you, Rob, for that message. But let's go back to Ali and her question.
What determines how long an advantage is given by a ref in a game? Sometimes a player will go on one or two bits and then suddenly it's advantage over, or it can go on what seems like forever and suddenly they'll blow and come back to where the advantage is. So what rules or what determines how long a ref plays advantage for? Cheers, guys. Hope to see you soon. Bye.
That is a great question. I bet so many people are thinking that. So, look, instead of us answering it, let's get superstar referee Sarah Cox to help us answer it. Hello, Coxie. Happy New Year.
Yeah. Hello. Thanks. Happy New Year. I'm not sure about the superstar bit, but I'm definitely a referee.
Well, just well known then.
Do
just well known.
Down.
Gnaws.
So Coxie, thanks so much for joining us. Great to have you with us. So this bit about advantage then, I mean, I know I did my ELRA 1-2-3 many, many years ago. Look, there are broadly two types of advantage. Is that fair to say? A kind of knock-on advantage, penalty advantage? Talk us through. How can you answer Ali's question for us?
So the technical terms are tactical and territorial. So that's what really is the underpinning of advantage. Like you've said, Nick, when you look at when we play advantage, it will be off a penalty or it will be something like a knock on. So when it comes to a knock on, more often than not, that will be a little bit shorter in advantage. We will look at whether you've gained a tactical advantage from it or a territorial. So the territorial might be when you see someone kicks it. It might be that you spin a wide pass and then you make a break down the wing. That's that territorial where we're satisfied that you've gained enough territory that we can let that play through. And that also applies to the penalty side of things as well. So again, if you do that crossfield kick, you gather the ball and you go in and score, or you gather a ball and you're a 10, 15 metres ahead of the mark of where the penalty might have been, and it would be in a more advantageous place than, say, if we gave you the option to kick to touch or kick, or if you're not in range of post, then we'll let that advantage go and we'll say, fine, you've gained that advantage. The tactical side of things is more around, have we allowed you the option to do as you wish, to play as you wish, to do anything you like with that ball? And that's when you tend to see, again, slightly shorter advantages on those knock-ons, where tactically we'd say I've pretty much gone through the move, if you like, that you wanted to go through. No one's hindered you doing that. Let's play through and we can say that your advantage is over. You've still got possession of the ball. We can move the game on. Where it tends to be longer advantages, and where people will ask about that, and where it gets a little bit more sticky, is when you tend to be in and around the 22s. So can you get enough of that territorial advantage off a penalty advantage for us to be able to say that we've satisfied that, and that you've satisfied that, and you've been able to play in the way that you'd like to? And when you sit inside those 22s, you've got the options to go for touch, you've got the options to go for posts, and then you've got the option to play that advantage through and see what happens. So that's what we're sort of weighing up constantly as the ball moves around. And once we're satisfied that, yeah, okay, that's happened, all of those or a majority of those have been satisfied, we'll let that advantage go. But more often than not, when you sit inside a 22, you'll see that we'll come back for penalties. And we'll come back for those ones where you say, okay, I don't think any of that has been satisfied. We'll allow you the option then, because there's no advantage gained.
Oh, it's tricky, isn't it?
So I guess that's that feeling that fans have. It is, yeah, where they're saying, okay, more so in that 22 as you're describing, well, it's likely to be more about how close to a scoring opportunity somebody gets.
Correct.
That satisfies what you're talking about, a sort of territorial advantage. And I think, you know, certainly from when I was a kid to now, which is a number of years, I think that knock-on advantage used to be a lot longer, used to be a bit bigger, but actually I like the fact that the modern game now, it's pretty quick. If you've got a knock-on advantage and you opt straight away within half a second to kick the ball away, a referee will largely say that's advantage over, because you've been allowed to continue, like you say, Coxie, what you wanted to do.
Yeah, ultimately. That's what it comes down to. And we're in a phase at the moment with rugby where we want to keep it moving. We want to keep the momentum of games. So when it comes to a knock-on, if you give a team an advantage and they use that, why come back for something when we can keep everybody moving, we keep the game moving, and everybody's satisfied that that's happened? The ones where we look at the penalty side of things, that's when it's more serious, if you like. And in its rawest form, that's what we look at each time, is how we can allow teams to do as they wish and gain exactly what it says on the tin, advantage.
And Coxie, look, you've had a great year. I was wondering whether yourself and Amy Barrett-Theron just have a regular supply of congratulations cards and you send her one. Congratulations, Amy, for doing the 39th test, the most of a women. Thank you, Coxie. Oh, good. Well done, Coxie. You've done the 40th test, because you're both just at about the same level, aren't you?
Yeah, that tells you how long we've been around for. So, yes.
It's a great achievement, though. And how's your 2025 looking? I'm sure you're, you know, keen to be part of what will be the biggest Women's Rugby World Cup ever.
Yeah, look, it's looking and hotting up at the moment. Just some of the appointments that are coming through that we're seeing at the moment. Six Nations, obviously. I think this, like you say, Nick, that this World Cup's going to be the biggest that we've seen. So I'm really excited, and hopefully I get the call up for it. But yeah, we'll see what happens. But like I say, like the year is looking manic as it is, let alone then when you put up warm up games in and what have you. So no, I'm really excited for it.
Well, we wish you the very best of luck in the new year. Thanks so much for joining us, giving us a bit of clarity on all of that. Yes. And we look forward to seeing you with the whistle through 2025. Thank you, Coxie.
No, thank you very much for having me.
Take care. Right, so a few other messages that we've had. First up, this one was sent to me by Andy Watts, who said, "Hi, Gloucester Heart Reef fan who can't understand why Wales are not more competitive at international level." Oh, Andy, don't get me started. "Gloucester Hartbury destroyed Exeter and pulled away from Saris in the last 20 minutes. The top two teams after Gloucester Hartbury have had a spluttering start to the season. The difference? Clakey George. Millie Hyatt and Ellie Green did nothing wrong when they played, but somehow Clakey makes a big difference. Beth and Lewis, Kate Williams also had storming games. Two out of three of the great back row. There are different styles of fly halves, and that may suit different styles of game. If next Wales coach..." Please not Sean Lynn.
Yeah, doesn't want to like that.
"Adopts Gloucester Hartbury's style of play, they would have a team that already play that way, and the Bristol Welsh players would fit in well to that too. The talent is there. Just need a coach to build on what they are good at, not to try and make them play in a way that does not suit them. You know all this already, but just thought I'd drop a line, because for a Gloucester Hartbury fan, the return of Clakey has prompted such a welcome and dramatic improvement in Gloucester Hartbury's style of play." And he said, "P.S. I think you're great pundits." That was very nice as well.
Yes, I think he said you are a great pundit. So I don't know that applied to me. But I love this because, you know, clearly a passionate Gloucester Hartbury fan, also wants the best for Wales. Also doesn't want to have to give up Sean Lynn to do so. I think he makes some good points, doesn't he?
He makes some really good points. And let's now add to the fact that the other Welsh players that are playing for Harlequins, they're performing out of their skin as well. Lisa Neumann on the wing standing out. Kaylee Powell in at fly half. You know, Alex Callender, like, Literally every player dotted around the league is performing, is standing out. We're saying their names. So look, whatever coach comes in, biggest weight on their shoulders, and rightfully so, because they've got quality players in Wales and you've got to get them singing.
Kayleigh Powell, I think, for me, could be the most improved player in the league this season. I'm not sure I credited her with her ability and talent as much as she's showing this season. So loving it. Keep it up, Kayleigh. Right, thank you, Andy. We also asked for some 2025 predictions from you all. So here are a few.
All right, so Chloe from the Rugby Voice says, Quins will win the league and Ireland to beat the Black Ferns again.
Whoa. Yeah, that's going to be the spicy one at 2025 World Cup, isn't it? Who is going to pull a result off against who? Well, they did it in 24. Okay, Sammy Boy says, Quins deserve to be in the final. Such great rugby and you can see they're loving every second. Yeah,
Connie T 2022 says, Harlequins v Gloucester final.
Oh, there's a big shout. Pan Kadachan says the Red Roses will beat Canada in the Rugby World Cup final. There we go. There's a World Cup prediction.
Yeah. All right. Paul says the PWR pod will break all records. Well, that is true, but only if you go and tell everybody to tune in. So please do spread the word. Spread the word of the pod.
Yes, thank you. And we also had PWR Ranger Brad also responded to say, England will finally release a Red Roses top in men's fit so we can fully support them. And I love that. Yes, let's hope that that happens. We also heard from Tom Sims, who left us this voice note on his predictions for 2025.
So 2025 promises a close finish with five clubs battling for those four spots at the top. My guess, sorry to say, I think Saracens miss out. Noting the Quins, Exeter and Gloucester form, it'll be a straight shootout between Bristol and Saracens. Bristol will get a boost, whether Alona plays or not, and they take it, I think. And despite all the talent in the PWR, I think it's Ellie Kildon for Player of the Season. Moving on, once the season's done, we have the Six Nations with a warm-up for their main event of a record-breaking World Cup. I'll be there. And there'll be plenty of seven stars in the mix. So I think keep an eye on the USA and Australia, who they could cause an upset. But I think it's got to be an England-New Zealand final and home World Cup. Surely England win. Lots to enjoy, plenty for you to review. Here's to record-breaking 2025.
Thank you, Tom. Saracens to miss out on the top four. Tom wow. is not going to the Stonex anytime soon, by the sounds of things. My goodness.
But it's just like the top four is just insane. And I really don't know how can we call it? Because, you know, before the win that Sarri's got against Bristol, you may have said that. But after the way that they disposed of Bristol, like, is this the point now we see Sarri's kick on and they work their way back in? I just don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think it's going to be telling this weekend, because if Gloucester Hartbury get that result against Bristol at home, and others also move away, then that 6-point gap could get bigger. Yeah. So it's really, you know, there are more games to come this season, but yeah, interesting times for Dave Ward and Bristol if it doesn't work out. Anyway, there we go. Thank you, Tom, for that. The power line 07880 716 219. If you would also like to keep in touch, we'll take texts, we'll take voice notes, whatever you fancy. It was great to have so many of you get in touch for our first show of the year. Right. Our one question, well, due to the Christmas schedule and this already being a packed show, we will wait to hear from Bulu Matai Tonga and her one question feature next time. Any other business, Philippa? We're finally here. What a busy show we've had.
Yeah, it certainly is. Well, I would like to get into my power play, if that's okay.
Ah, yes. Go on then. Yes. What's the first PT power play of 2025?
Well, I thought no better way than to start the year with the previous year, the 2024 World Rugby Player of the Year, Ellie Kildon, saying, you know what? Whoever wants to win this trophy next year, you got to beat this. Because in the 70th minute, she does a counter-attack that was just the calmest, most assured, most brilliant execution of skill I have seen in a long time. And in front of a big crowd on an exhibition match, just good on. I was just so proud for like women's rugby and for her to be like, yes, this is what we do. Like, this is the one. And I could break it down really noisy, but I'm just going to say, you know what it was like? It was like, imagine she was recording an advert all right, for some fancy new boots. And the director said to you, look, you're going to catch the ball in the 22 and there's going to be a load of players running from there and a load of players running from there. You just do a little fake like this and a little step like this and you just guess everyone and you'll just go. Because that's how it played out. It was just beautiful. The slow start, that there was a hitch kick and then there was the boost of injection of speed and there was the transfer of the ball and she scored at the end. Oh, come on now. Ellie Kildone.
Very good. Very good. Well, and this is it. You know, sometimes in rugby, you end up bigging up a player and then you realise you've got to big them up again. And then you big them up. It's the Antoine Dupont effect. You sort of get a bit sick of saying the same name and you wonder if people are getting bored of it. But players in great form who are at the height of their powers will continue to deliver. And I think, we certainly have seen that from Ellie Kildone. So well done, Ellie. You are the first power play winner from Philippa of 2025. Well, I am looking forward to getting down to Ashton Gate on Sunday and I'll be there with about 7,000 other people, I hope, and no doubt plenty tuning in on TNT Sport and no doubt with where that coverage goes in the USA. So that'll be great. What are you up to this weekend, Philippa?
This weekend, hopefully kicking the lurgy and actually venturing out of the house might
How
be
exciting.
Nice. How exciting. How exciting. But no, in all seriousness, we have planned around this game. Like, I cannot wait. I've told all my friends, my family, you know, we're going to have a couple of people getting together and we're going to sit down and watch this game. And I can't wait to hear your lovely voice over as well.
Well, most kind. Super. Well, thank you all for being with us. Do tell your friends about us. You can hit that subscribe button if you would like to make sure that the PowerPod is delivered straight into your inbox when it comes out. And a very happy new year to you all. What a year. Rugby World Cup year. And just a couple of months for the PWR to also reach its conclusion. A great few weeks and months ahead. Great to have you with us. The PowerPod is a Level production produced by Caleb Matombwa. Bye-bye for now.
Happy New Year!